Who can tell me what the purpose of the church, the primary, the principle? I'll start again. I just suddenly realized the only two people who've actually got mixed up in the process are Robert and Anna. Yay, you're the only person who's actually shifted sides. So anyway, something to think about and work on for next week. Everybody shifts sides. Right, who can tell me what the primary purpose of the church is? But you're all thinking deep thoughts. You're all looking at Erin. You think, oh, she's done an essay. She'll know. No, it's not to get angry. What's the primary purpose? Come on. Yes, Robert. To bring people together. Does everybody agree? Let's have a debate. One or two heads shaking, but no one's willing to say what? Yes, Susan? To make disciples. Yes. Together, yes. I mean, bring people together is part of it. Primary purpose, Jesus said, come and follow me, and then go and make disciples. So the primary purpose of the church is, let's see if this works. I always like it when it works. Is the church, oh, yes. Oh, get back. The church is primarily missional. The church exists to make disciples. And M Movement stands for a missional movement. This is what every church leader longs to be part of, is a missional movement where suddenly it's happening. You don't have to sort of organize it, arrange it. It's just happening. People are excited. They're knocking on your door saying, tell me more about what this thing is that you believe. And everywhere people are interested. And in order for a missional movement to happen, you need missional communities. You need churches or smaller groups, whatever, that are actually, they're praying for people that they know and love who don't know about Jesus. They're engaging, they're getting involved, they're doing all sorts of things like that. And for that to happen, you need missional leaders. You need people who are sort of inspiring people and challenging people and saying, whoa, you know, this is where God is taking us. Are you coming with me? And in order for that to happen, you need a discipleship culture. Which is why for the last month, our theme has been discipleship culture. And a discipleship culture is a culture which naturally produces people who are followers of Jesus. They don't even have to think about it. Everybody else is doing it, and everybody sort of joins in, tags along. That's a discipleship culture. And the interesting thing about discipleship culture and discipling leadership is for those first two things, which are the sort of measurable things to happen in a church or in a community, for you even to begin to see glimpses of those top two things, you need all this stuff to be happening below the waterline, a bit like an iceberg. It's all got to be happening below the waterline before you even begin to see the beginnings of the church fulfilling its primary purpose. So that's why we've been doing this whole series on what is a discipleship culture. A culture is not an organization. A culture is not a structure. A culture is not rules and regulations and who does this and who does that and all that sort of stuff and when we do it and what the rota is. That is not a culture. A culture is a way of life. It's something that you live. It's something that you're just part of, that you do. The word used to describe this way of life in the Bible is this word, oikos. And it's a Greek word. And that's what tonight's about, oikos. Okay? There's two types of Greek. There's lots of more than one. There's quite a lot of types of Greek. But there's two types of Greek that are really important if you want to understand the Bible. The first is ancient Greek, which is what Plato spoke and what Archimedes spoke and what all the old philosophers, Socrates, spoke. And the word oikos in ancient Greek is defined as this. An oikos is the ancient Greek equivalent of a household or a house or a family. An oikos was the basic unit of society in most Greek city-states and included the head of the oikos, usually the oldest male, his extended family, wife and children, and the slaves living together in one domestic setting. So it's a great big extended family, that in ancient Greek. In New Testament Greek, which is the Greek that the New Testament was written in, which came along a few hundred years later and which had changed a wee bit, oikos still has the same meaning. It's a place, it's a house, it's an inhabited house, it's a home, it's any building, whatever, of a palace. It's the house of God, it's the tabernacle, that's oikos. But it's also the people who live there, all the persons forming one family, a household, the family of God, of the Christian church, of the church of the Old and New Testaments. Or it's your descendants. You know, you talk about the house of David. So as David was king, and all his descendants are the house of David. So in New Testament Greek, that's what oikos means. So when you're saying, I'm going to John's house, you might mean, I'm going to John's, the place where John lives, or you might mean, I'm going to see John's family. See what I mean? That's what oikos means. It's people as well as buildings. What happened there? If you've got a Bible, look up Acts chapter 2, and you'll find the word oikos. Because from the very start, the church was based around oikos. Acts chapter 2, this is the day of Pentecost. Peter's just challenged all the people who are listening to him. He's just challenged them to put their trust in Jesus. If we pick up Acts chapter 2, verse 40, it's on page number 1094, right to the end. He says, the promise is for you and for your children, for all who are far off, for all whom the Lord our God will call. With many other words, he warned them and he pleaded with them, save yourselves from this corrupt generation. Those who accepted his message were baptized, and about 3,000 were added to their number that day. 3,000 people. What did they do? They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe. Many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as they had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their oikos and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Did you notice I didn't read the right thing there? Should have said homes. But the word oikos is translated as homes in that bit of the passage. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God, enjoying the favor of all the people, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. This is a church fulfilling its primary purpose. It's a church which is making disciples. The Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Where did they meet together? Two places. Where did they meet together? Homes, good. 10 points at the back. That side's winning. I'll ask this side. Where was the other place they met together? You're all too shy. Sorry? The temple, that's right. So they met in the great big public place, but they also met together in their homes. Remember, there's 3,000 of them. That's quite a few people. Okay, so it's not just there that we find oikos. Here's a whole bunch of passages from the Bible where we find oikos. Day by day they continue. Yeah, I've just read that one. Then the next one, Acts chapter 5. And every day in the temple and in their homes, they kept right on teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. That's where they met. They had no church buildings in those days. Church buildings weren't built for 400 years. So they just met in each other's homes. They're oikos. Remember, home doesn't just mean place, it means people. Here's another one from Acts 16. This is about Lydia, the cloth merchant. She hears the gospel. When she and her household had been baptized, she urged us, that's Paul and his friends, if you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house, my oikos, my household, my family, and stay. And she prevailed upon us. So the very first church in Europe was in Lydia's house. It was Lydia's oikos. Here's a bit from one of Paul's letters, Romans 16. Greet Prisca and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ. Also greet the church that is in their house, their household. Remember, it's not just a building, it's a people. Colossians 4. Greet the brethren who are in Laodicea and the church that is in her house. It's interesting, it's mainly women's houses in the New Testament. So that's what a church looked like in the New Testament. It wasn't a big building like this. It wasn't a temple, because they soon got barred from meeting in the temple. So instead, they met in each other's houses. And when you read in the epistles about greet someone at such and such a church, that means someone who is staying in such and such a place, which happens to be their house. All houses, all churches were house-based. So if you actually understand that, then that is roughly what oikos looks like in the New Testament. That's what household or house looks like in New Testament. So there's all generations, and they're all working together, and they're all living together, and they're all teaching each other, and they're all eating together, and they're all doing all sorts of stuff. So remember, there was about 3,000 people. Well, even before Pentecost, there were a number of believers, and that's what they looked like, a whole bunch of households scattered throughout Jerusalem. After the day of Pentecost, 3,000. 3,000. If the average size of a household is about 25 to 40, let's say the average size of a household, an extended household with servants and kids and aunties and uncles. You know, when Lindsay and I were living in Pakistan, we lived in an oikos. There was one matriarch, a great grandmother called Dadi Zati, who had five daughters, and she had a bit of land. So when the five daughters were married, all their husbands came to live with the daughters, rather than the other way around, because they knew they'd get some land to farm. So we formed this great big hamlet with Dadi Zati living with one of her daughters, and then the other four daughters all in the great big line. They were the household. There were about 60 of us. And we were in and out each other's pockets. If a guest came to stay at any of the houses, they'd borrow food from the other house. If something needed doing on the fields, they'd all go out together. That's how it works. It's an oikos. So if the average number of people in oikos, say, is 50, how many oikoses are there in 3,000 believers? Who's a mathematician? 60. Yeah, I tried to get some idea of what the church looked like in Jerusalem in the days of Pentecost. It looked something like that. All these are different households where people are meeting. Here's a question for you. What's today's equivalent? Ask yourselves. I'll give you 2 minutes. What's today's equivalent? Or you can answer as well. What's today's equivalent of that idea of an extended family? Nope. They don't have to be Christians. Yeah, well, talk about it amongst yourselves. You come up with any answers yet? Shout them out. What does Charlie say? What's today's equivalent? Connection. Oh, very good, very good. Connection groups. How big are connection groups? It varies. Oikos varies in size. Yes, Claire. The pub?
Not for me.
No. Actually, the tragedy is that pub life is shrinking. You know, like Libyans really struggling these days because no one goes anymore. So all these sorts of places that where you used to find community like that are gradually fading away, apart from connection groups. Did anybody else come up with any other ideas where you find oikos these days? In a commune. Yeah, that's right, in places like kibbutzes. You don't get many communes these days, but if you were to look for a commune, you'd find one. There are some. The idea everybody shares everything and lives together, all that sort of stuff. But basically, our society is no longer based on extended families. Families don't live together anymore and look after each other anymore. Some do, but it's rare, and it's getting rarer and rarer. So the whole idea of oikos, working together, living together, sharing together, you don't come across all that much anymore. And yet, it was in oikos that the church really flourished. And so that's a challenge for us all. If we want our church to be a missional church, we need to create a discipleship culture. If we want to create a discipleship culture, we need to recreate that idea of being part of a big extended family. Think of all the things a family does. They eat together. They sleep in the same accommodation, roughly. They help each other out. They teach each other. They share things like, when we were living in that hamlet, if someone wanted to borrow your pots and pans, they would come and ask you for your pots and pans, and then you'd have to come and ask them for them to give it back. They share together. These are all the sorts of things that happen in a family. And that's what an oikos was all about. If you actually read those words in Acts chapter 2, They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, the breaking of bread, to prayer. So there's a lot of teaching going on. Everyone's filled with awe, miraculous signs and wonders. All the believers were together. They had everything in common, selling their possessions. They gave to the poor and then gave to everybody in need. And every day they continued to meet together in the public place, the temple courts, but they also share food together and praise God, enjoying the favor of all the people. And as a result of that, God adds to their number daily those who are being saved. Oikos, a way of life. One final element that's missing is the idea of mission. It sort of happens naturally. But Mike Parker, if you give him any subject, he loves to give you something to think about. And we were having a discussion the other day about fellowship. What's fellowship? And he said, fellowship only exists around mission. If you don't have mission, you won't have fellowship. In other words, fellowship, true fellowship, is only really comes about when people are engaged in doing something together. If they're just meeting up for the sake of it, hanging out, all that sort of stuff, they'll get a bit bored after a while. Or they might get a bit cratchety, or they might fall out, or they might start knocking lumps out of each other, or all that sort of stuff starts to happen. All the negativity starts to come out. You've got to have movement in fellowship. And it's the same with oikos. You've got to have a purpose. And the purpose of oikos is mission. This is probably the most important thing. If you're going to take anything home with you tonight, it has to be this. If you enjoy each other's company as Christians, then you should be doing something with that. If you're in a house group, if you're in a connections group, if you're in some sort of interest group where you all enjoy meeting up together, your purpose in doing that cannot just simply be so that you have a good time. The moment you start doing that, you've lost sight of mission. Fellowship only happens when people engage in mission. And I've seen that. I've seen that in the lives of a number of people here in this room who are engaged in mission. It's through engaging in mission you really appreciate fellowship more. Suddenly it becomes really valuable to you. If you're not engaging in mission, you sort of get indigestion with it after a while. I'm bored, I think I'll do something else. All that sort of stuff. But when you're actually doing something, where you're stepping out of your comfort zone and doing something that tests your faith, that's when you really begin to value the support of the other people around you who know and love you. And it's the policy of the Kirkgate Trust. We our motto is reach, teach, and then release. So the whole idea is that we're trying to encourage young people to engage in mission, because we know that when they do that, their faith is going to grow. But we also know that when they do that, they'll understand the importance of supporting each other, the importance of being part of a church. And what I love about Erin going off the 20 schemes is she was only willing to do it on condition that she could come here on Sunday nights so that we could support her. Engage in mission, you really begin to value your fellow travelers along the way. I'm knocking huge chunks out of what I'm going to say tonight simply because I know time's moving on. Here's a picture of the oikos in the early church. See? They're not just looking after each other. There's arrows going out. And as a result of those arrows going out, other oikoses are starting to form, other households. So, I'm interested in that. Well, why don't you start a group in your place? I'll come and help you. And then you start going out, and the result is lots and lots of networks of little households all over the place. There's a famous historian called Kenneth Scott Latourette, who David Hill loves. And he wrote masses of volumes. I mean, really, really thick books, Aaron. I mean, really. All about history and interesting stuff like that. But he asked a question that stuck in my mind, which is, why is it that in history there are so few early church missionaries? In the times of the New Testament, why do we only hear of about five people who are actual missionaries? There's Paul, there's Peter, there's Apollos, Barnabas, Philip, Cyrus, Silent fact of six. John Mark. Okay, there's 10. But the point is, there's very few who are actually heroic missionaries, but like Paul. And the reason he says is because the work of mission in the early church was done by normal people. The vast majority of the gospel spreading that was done in the early church was done by normal people who gossiped the gospel in their daily lives. And who people who weren't Christians thought, what have they got that I haven't got? Tell me more about it. So there's how the early church spread. And that's what God is calling us. Now, how do we do this? Well, we've got our oikos, whatever it is. Our house group, our connections group, our huddle, our whatever it is. And that is the wee picture there with all the people inside it. But there will be people coming within our orbit. And some people will come within our orbit every day. Some people will come within our orbit every week. Some people will come within our orbit every year, just once. So different people come within the orbit of our fellowship, our way of life, our culture, our oikos, at different frequencies. But every time they do, they will take away with them a piece of the kingdom. And that's what will draw them back. If we are living out the Christian life. If we're not, they won't want to come back at all. But if we are living out the Christian life, they will catch a glimpse when they come within our orbit of something so special, it will draw them back again. That is how the church grew. I talked about, you know, that's how the church grows. Well, it also grows with people coming into our orbit themselves. Now, David Hill is going to be talking about this next week. How can we make sure that our fellowship is open and welcoming in this way? So I'm not going to talk about it too much tonight. But I have got two examples to give you. One is the very first house group I was part of. It was in a church called St. Catherine's. And a couple called Robin and Mary Dunbar started it up. And they said, our house is open. Come Sunday night after church. And the baking will be good. And we'll see what happens. So Lindsay and I were amongst the first that were invited. We went along. There was about half a dozen of us. And we sort of committed to doing it. And over the weeks, that became the most important time of our week. Because we're all involved in the world. We're all doing different things. We all needed support. And that became the most important time of week. And every time someone new turned up at church, one of us would say, so what are you doing after church tonight? And that was how our group grew. And the influence of that group spread out through the whole church. And to me, that was a good example of what oikos is. It's something that's open, and it's mission-minded, and it's looking for people to bless. And the other example is Stage and Slam, would you believe? I thought Stage and Slam this year was absolutely wonderful. And for me, the defining moment of Stage and Slam was on the Friday night after we'd done all the official stuff. And after we'd found out what happened about Evolve and all that sort of stuff, you know. Yeah, exactly. But towards the end, once we'd all had our pizzas and our seconds and all that sort of stuff, a couple of girls over at a table started singing along with the song that was on coming over the PA. And they didn't give up. They just kept going. And then suddenly a whole table full in the other corner jumped up and they started joining in. And then suddenly another tableful jumped up and they all started joining. In the meantime, everybody else was just chatting away. Ended up half the room was standing on their chairs singing along this song. And it wasn't a Christian song. It was just a fun song. But there was an amazing, and everybody else was just sort of chatting away because maybe they didn't like singing, I don't know. But there was an amazing sense of oikos in the room. You could almost touch it. It was like, here are people who loved each other and trusted each other. And yes, none of us are perfect. And think of a family. Family is not held together by people liking each other. A family is held together by people loving each other, despite all the things they don't like about each other. So I'm not saying that Stage and Slam was perfect, but there's a lovely, lovely sense of God's presence. And I think anyone who came within the orbit of Stage and Slam that night would definitely have wanted to come back. So, here's something for you to think about now. Okay, now I want you to turn to the person next to you and tell them your thoughts. Well, not all of your thoughts, obviously, but most of you, you know, along the lines of when have you most felt part of oikos?